welcome, welcome. You're listening to the Cash Brian Radio Show on KHS 1220 and 98.1 FM. Well, for those listeners who have never listened to our show every week, and we've been doing this now for over 6 years, each week we interview either the CEO of a company, the founder of something new, or somebody who can teach you something about business. That's what we like to do on the Ask Brian Radio Show, and we do it each and every week. So put it down, Thursday, 1 to 2 p.m. If you want to listen to us live on the radio or live on Facebook, that's the way to listen. Also, if you miss an episode, don't worry. We have a podcast. It's available on Apple, Spotify, and all the major podcasts for Ask Brian, A-S-K-B-R-I-E-N. And with the E, we're going to try to explain to you why is Ask Brian spelled with an E. For that, we have my co-host, Tracy, who's going to help us out. So please explain one of the reasons why Ask Brian, and Brian is spelled B-R-I-E-N, because most people spell Brian B-R-I-A-N or B-R-Y-A-N. Very few people spell it with an E, unless they're the Irish descent via Brian family. So why?
Well, not to mention that your name's Peter, so that's even more complicated. But
when a lot of E's.
Well, we like to focus on the E's because we're entrepreneurs and we interview entrepreneurs, and so that's our number one E. But we have several other ones, and one of them is that this show, because we're entrepreneurs, educates other entrepreneurs. And that is incredibly important when you're starting out a business. You really need some resources to help shortcut that learning curve. So we're all about the ease with the entrepreneurs educating, and we do that by having experts on our show.
And what is an expert? What does that mean? I'm an expert eater. I can eat so much watermelon, it's incredible.
And no one cares. But what they do care about, what they do care about is how many hours you committed to your area of expertise professionally. And we do know, Peter, that you have a lot of hours allocated to your expertise in the law. And so with an expert, we have some math. I'm going to try to get it right, but, you know, I'm blind, and I like to use that as an excuse every now and then if I'm not 100% sure about the math
formula
I'm about to roll out.
Point, but go ahead.
I know, right? And no one cares. But on average, entrepreneurs, supposedly, which is such not a fact, that they work 40 hours a week. We know they work more like 60, 70, 80 hours a week, not to scare you, but that's the real deal. So a minimum of 40 hours a week over the course of 50-ish weeks, because we do hope at least you take some vacation. And then that times 5 years will give you about 10,000 hours plus. And if you've invested 10,000 hours of your life into one specific subject matter, as both of you and I have, probably more like 80,000 hours, then which was just last year, then that makes you an expert. And we have some amazing experts on our shows, which we have a very special one today that I can't wait to introduce.
Well, for the first time, I'm impressed. That was very good. Usually you have difficulty, and I'm the mathematician of the group, and I usually have to go through that. So that was pretty good.
I've been practicing.
You probably have been practicing. Now, one of the things that you did allude to, which is correct, we probably should revise this and say probably 2.5 years, because as you say, you're probably working 80 hours a week, and so 50 hours, so that's, you know, if you do it that way, you can probably take it down to 2.5 years and split it, because that's how many hours you have to work. There's no entrepreneur that I know that starts something that can really work, you know, 40 hours a week and be successful. You need to put in the time. You know, it's the old adage, you know, if you don't put in the time, you can't succeed, and that's what you need. You need that time, and you need the effort. And by the way, E for effort has never, ever been introduced, but I'm going to bring in a new E this week. E for effort.
That is a good one. But in order to put in all of that time and all of that effort, you really need some energy.
And excitement.
And enthusiasm. And all of those things are very much one of the reasons why we love our E's. And I have a particularly favorite E. I don't know if you, I'm pretty sure I know you know what that E is, but.
Grease Lightning.
I love this one so much, I sing it in my head, because we, Peter, are electrifying.
Woohoo!
And I have chills, and they're multiplying.
Now, our guest, if he hasn't said, what am I doing? I'm going to speak to my team, because I don't know why I'm here. Why do I care about these E's? If he's still around, hopefully he is. We do need to get to the show. The show must go on. All right.
The show must go on.
Exactly.
So without any further ado.
A-D-I-E-U.
All vowels with one vowel.
So,
all vowels, one
are you still there? Or yes. Did I? And by the way, our guest, his name is Justin Winder, if I'm pronouncing correctly. Hopefully I am. He has quite a background. And so, first of all, Justin, we'd like to introduce you. So give us a little bit of, very, very short summary of your background. Your work history and what you've done, a couple of things here and there, just major points.
Well, I would definitely consider myself an entrepreneur. It's what I majored in at college and my university at Northeastern University, which was pretty interesting as well, it was a university that we ultimately had a co-op program and got to work as well as go to school half the year, but my primary business is in IT. I don't know how I can throw an E in there, but excellence or excellent IT services.
Well, there's an E in technology.
There is in services. There's two E's as well.
Absolutely. I like how you kind of getting in with the program. You understand the whole E system here, and we're not Sesame Street for Business, by the way, but we should be. Actually, Northeastern, I'm very familiar with that school. That's up in Boston, and people don't know this about me, but I did spend my first year in college at the University of Rhode Island, and we did drive up to Boston, Quincy Market, that area, and that was pretty nice. Then I transferred to the University of Buffalo for my last 3 years. But so I do know the area very well, and that's a very good school. How did you get, when you say you're in IT, explain to us what areas of IT you're involved in.
Yes, so a very interesting question. Today I would tell you that we are involved in almost all the aspects because of the fact that our business is located in the U.S., at least in Southern California, where we have mostly small to medium-sized businesses. Most of the large enterprises have taking the advantage of moving out of state. And so small to medium-sized businesses ultimately need almost, in a sense, like total outsourcing. So they need assistance with anything and everything within IT. So SMS today is comprised of a data center here located in Irvine, California. We have a 40,000-square-foot data center where we provide co-location services, and we can get into what those services are later and what co-location means, but we provide co-location, managed services, so we handle end customers' IT services at their location, so all the way down to the desktop, so we'll manage their network, their server or compute infrastructure and applications, as well as their desktop. And then the other service that we provide is private managed cloud. So if people heard of AWS or have heard of Azure, Microsoft Azure, those are public clouds. We ultimately provide a private managed cloud, difference really being in the fact that we manage. So in a public cloud, you ultimately are self-provisioning, you're managing that infrastructure with your own resources, where our service is one where we provide the labor and the management of that infrastructure.
So do you keep the machine, do you keep the servers and of your clients up and running, or do they have to do any monitoring on that end? Is that what you mean by the private handling of the cloud, that you're kind of checking on it and making sure that everything is running smoothly, or is beyond that?
So that's a good question. There's two answers to that. So if the customer has their own servers, we can manage those servers at their location, or we could migrate those servers into our data center, creating their own, basically, cloud. And we will manage and take responsibility for those servers and the applications that are installed on those servers, whether they're in our data center co-located or whether they're at the customer's headquarters. Private managed cloud means that they do not have servers. They're renting the computing, so renting the servers from us, and ultimately the application is something that we're also installing and managing, as well as the infrastructure. So the difference between a private managed cloud and co-location is that there's hardware included in a private managed cloud versus co-location or managed services, where the customer is providing the hardware.
Do they need to download any software for this? For either one.
Do they need to? What software? Could you repeat that?
Do they need to download any software? I mean, you're providing the hardware, or they're providing the hardware, but do they need to install like your software on it?
No. Typically, what the customer would do would give us access to either media or an account, where we would then download that software and install that on their behalf. What the key, though, is the application is just an empty application until you populate it with data. So a lot of the times if we're providing a customer a hosted application in a new environment, then there's also a data migration that occurs.
I was just about to ask you that, because there are many, many clients, and in fact, I've even done it myself with some of my websites, and that can be a very difficult thing when you have to migrate over. So when I, there was a company, I think it was called Liquid Web or something along those lines.
Yeah.
And so there was a company called Liquid Web, and I believe that I had to migrate all my data over there. So that was a very difficult process, but they were able to help me out. So if that's something that your company offers, that can be very beneficial, because I know that when you've got a lot of data to transfer, it's not easy to do.
Correct. That's absolutely correct. The other, though, thing that occurs in our industry today is virtualization. And so with, for instance, VMware, or even with Hyper-V, which is Microsoft's product, with virtualization, you can virtualize ultimately the hardware, the application, in a sense, as well as the data. And so with virtualization, migrating and moving applications and data becomes much, much easier. And then there's tools to be able to convert those files. So when you ultimately, for instance, in VMware's world, the file is called a VMDK file. That file ultimately encapsulates the, in a sense, the hardware. And when I say hardware, it's not physically encapsulating hardware, but in order to run on specific hardware, you have to have drivers. And so those drivers and all that's needed within that hardware is included, as well as the operating system and the data associated within that application. And so you can take, in a sense, a snapshot or a picture of that at a point in time, and you can then move all of that, which makes it much easier to do migration between various clouds if they're virtualized. And in today's world, most things are virtualized for efficiencies and cost reasons.
So what are the three biggest challenges that your customers face in today's technology environment? Give us the top three.
I would tell you today, I would say cost, honestly, today. I would say year or two ago, security, but I would say cost, security, and uptime.
And how do you make it easier on those three issues? So, I mean, I don't want to get into pricing per se, so we're going to kind of skip that one because pricing is pricing. People can look, go to your website and check that out. But let's go over the other two. So how do you, on security, how do you make it the sites more secure for your customers? What are you doing that's making it more secure?
Okay, so there's security is something that ultimately isn't a layered approach. There's no such thing as completely secure in the IT world, to be honest. If anyone tells you that, then you should be very skeptical.
Well, I'm scared now about the nuclear facilities, but okay, go ahead.
Yes, right? Well, hopefully nuclear facilities require only local access, which the fact of the matter is that it probably doesn't, and people are have oversight, you know, from other locations. And as long as you have physical connections between those other locations, then in a sense you still have a LAN. But once you talk about a WAN, right, which is kind of...
And that's local area network, right?
Local area network is LAN. Wide area network is WAN. And WAN is, think of WAN as the internet. And so if something can come in a door, then something also can go out of a door. And those doors in the IT world are called ports. So if a port is open to send information out, then it's very possible that someone could sneak in that door to come in. And that's the reality of information, is that nobody's just physically connected with a console connection right to a computer, and that no one else has a connection to it. Of course, it's being broadcast to multiple, potentially desktops, or even to the web for clients to access, or third parties to access. At the end of the day, security and ports have to be open as well as then protected and closed. And so with security, you have these different layers. And so as you have a door open, you have multiple checkpoints to validate what's coming in and ultimately what's coming out. And so there's multiple layers and different technologies and approaches to securing a network.
And what can you do for the customer? So if I signed up with your service, what can you do for me in that security area? You're going to monitor that to make sure that the doors don't open so that nobody gets into my system? Is that what you're going to do? What exactly? How do you help out?
So when I say layers, so monitoring is just one layer. It's obviously not a proactive or reactive measure. It's just more of visibility. And so there's products, for instance, as simple as antivirus. Antivirus software or endpoint protection, same thing, is probably your very first layer. From there, there's firewalls that can be put into place. There can be intrusion detection as well as intrusion prevention systems. There are many different layers, and so it's based ultimately on the criticality of the customer's data as well as matching that ultimately with their budget. So obviously, too, perpetrators that are trying to penetrate or break security typically are going after entities, known entities, or entities that they feel have some sort of, high financial worth that they feel that they ultimately could potentially penetrate and, at the end of the day, extract financial gain.
We need to take a break, so we're going to be right back. It was in KHS 1220 and 98.1 FM, the S. Brian Lady Show. We'll be right back. Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the S. Brian Radio Show on KHS 1220 and 98.1 FM. We've been talking about security, but now we're going to pivot. Tracy, you there?
The pivot queen is back. Hello.
Woo!
I'm excited. So, Justin, when we opened the show, you talked about how that you have been an entrepreneur and your journey as an entrepreneur, I think, is going to be incredibly interesting to our audience. Can you tell us about just a snapshot of the businesses that you have started and run?
All right. So first, ultimately, was got involved with an SMS data center, and SMS data center is an IT services company. And being involved in a IT service company, you have the luxury to experience some of your customers' businesses and operations. And honestly, that's one of the things that gets me so excited about IT. But at the same time, opportunities come with investment as well as ultimately with acquisition. So we've had a few customers where they're in a position, sometimes have financial constraints, others have exit strategies, and we've ultimately been able to come in and acquire or help salvage their businesses. So one of the businesses, we've acquired managed services companies, so within our same sector, as well as acquiring companies that somewhat have some related experience. So, for instance, ART, Automatic Response Technologies, is a voice broadcast company that we have acquired. It was ultimately a customer that we acquired. And I'm also involved in commercial real estate. So having data centers and people with offices and whatnot have also moved us into diversifying into commercial real estate. We have other companies like ART that are under our umbrella as well, that have different technology plays that play on either our private managed cloud or ultimately managed services that we ultimately are continuing to operate and run.
And so that, I mean, that is a lot of different areas. And I mean, first of all, I want to highlight something that you said, because I think this is something a lot of business owners don't actually think about when they think about scaling their businesses. So this is why I want to highlight what you said. So in your existing business, you are also acquiring other businesses, which is really one of the fastest ways that people can scale a business if they have the financial resources to be able to acquire other businesses in their sector. This enables them to buy other books of business that are similar to theirs, or invest in other teams that might have a skill set that they need to grow. So I applaud you as a growth strategy. I'm assuming, like we're talking about, that that's one of the reasons you can accelerate the growth of your existing business, correct?
Absolutely, as well as then, right, offsetting costs. So when companies ultimately have high IT costs, ultimately there can be synergies between the two organizations if the owner operator wants an exit strategy, and ultimately we leverage then our internal infrastructure to offset a lot of those costs with, you know, the opportunity for growth, right? I mean, at the end of the day, just offsetting costs from one vendor to another isn't necessarily a business strategy, but if that comes with the ability to invest and enhance that business and grow the business, then ultimately there's a lot more strategy associated.
Are there any particular challenges that come with that strategy? Have you walked into any gotchas, or have you found any gems in your experience in doing that?
Absolutely. There's always challenges. Things always change. And the truth is that all companies, have a few skeletons in the closet. So absolutely. Once you get involved into the business and you better understand the finer details, you realize that, there's things that you need to address and overcome. And a lot of that honestly has to do with people and then their strategy towards attracting and onboarding customers.
And when you are trying to integrate teams, do you ever run into any kind of like personality complex or redundancy, and how do you handle that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that's any entrepreneur, anyone who's run a business, regardless of what industry we're in, we deal with needing to manage people, and that's an art in itself. I'm lucky to have some great talent around me who are probably more keen on personalities and keen on how to integrate teams. And to me, there's a little bit of marketing, a little bit of sales, but ultimately, I believe it comes down to communication and being transparent with communication to these, what I would call new badged employees.
And communication in itself, especially with technology, because technology is always changing, as you know more than anyone, but also generational communication has changed so much. Have you had experiences where you're having to alter or adjust your communication styles, either not just maybe the style of the communication itself in terms of how you're communicating, but also the formats of which you're and how you're communicating in terms of email versus text versus in person and things like that?
I have a good team that helps me with those things. I wouldn't say that I'm the most affluent with those specific topics, but what I'll tell you is I believe it kind of rolling things back. I believe that in person communication is key, so that you ultimately have the opportunity to read people's facial expressions and presence, and that is definitely important with communication. So sometimes taking a step backwards to take two steps forward can make more sense in those circumstances.
Yes, I agree. And I think everyone has their own communication style. But if one thing is consistent, and that is what you mentioned before, is your transparency and authenticity. And if you are consistently showing up and utilizing your authenticity and transparency as a tool, then I think your communication, you're already ahead of the majority of leaders. Would you agree?
I definitely agree. And I think that people, they appreciate those things because they ultimately have skepticism. They have fear. They have anxiety around change. And it ultimately communication helps with that. Trying to perfect your communication, trying to wait until the right time, sometimes those things aren't the right approach. And so I think being transparent, being genuine is definitely key, and realizing that you're dealing with people and their lives. Most of us have jobs. I would hope to say all of us have jobs, but the fact is that we spend a lot of our time away from our family, our hobbies, our friends, at work, and that's a significant portion of our life. And so, having stability there and transparency is absolutely paramount.
We're going to be taking a break. We're going to listen to our sponsors. Thank you. We'll be back in a minute. Stephanie, are you there?
Yeah. Hey, Brian. How are you?
All right. So, got a couple questions for you. You're our sponsor, and people always want to know, who is Albany Farms, and what do they do?
Yeah, so Albany Farms, we are a food manufacturing company located in Belfouche, South Dakota, and we specialize in fried instant ramen noodles.
And what is the brand name?
The brand name is Twin Noodles. You can find our products in Target and HEB. I know we mentioned Target last week, and so I do have those stores for you. You can find us in Target located in California at the Apple Valley North, Moreno Valley East, Palmdale East, Hesperia, amongst a couple other stores. So we're also found in Walmart Canada shelf. And, yeah.
Well, that sounds great. And you can get these in what? In cups, package, or both?
Yeah,
what?
Great question. So we do cups and pillows. The cups you'll be probably most familiar with our competitors, such as like Top Ramen, so that cup style. And then pillows, they require a little bit more prep work. You boil the water on the stove, and then, you know, you prep your noodles that way. So, but we do both.
Oh, just a small package. I thought you were talking about a pillow, like, hey, I can go to sleep on a pillow.
No. It's not time for a nap.
Because that would be a lot of ramen, huh? Like a whole pillow.
Exactly. Yeah.
And what's the other company that works with us? It's called Legal Steps. And first of all, they don't know how to spell. Whoever created the company is like not a good speller because he spells everything with a Z.
I know.
What is Legal? Yeah, what is Legal Steps with a Z?
Yeah, so Legal Steps with a Z is a great resource. If you don't know about it, you should. It's a do-it-yourself system to handle legal issues such as forming a business in California or even registering for a federal trademark. Ultimately, it saves you thousands of dollars, and it's a very empowering tool for entrepreneurs making legal easy.
Well, I think that, you know, I don't know what's going on here, but Legal Steps with a Z, Brian with an E, you know, I think somebody needs to take a spelling class. Thanks a lot, Steph. We're very glad to have you. We're going to go back to our interview. We have a great guest. And thank you very much, Steph. We'll see you next week. Tracy, you have some more questions?
Yeah, so you mentioned sales and marketing in a different context when we were talking before, but I would love to spend some time talking about your experiences with sales and marketing, what works for your business, and maybe even what hasn't worked, because sometimes we learn more from what we don't want to do or don't like than what's worked well. So I was curious if you could give us an outline of what your current sales and marketing strategy is.
All right, that's a good question. So to be honest, I would tell you that we have many strategies, and if you were to judge it on a scale of success, which I believe is you only have to be 51% right to be then successful, I would tell you pretty much all of them are unsuccessful. I don't think there's anything that gets us over 50%, for instance, a conversion or a sale. We ultimately are involved with email marketing. We're involved with search engine optimization. We do direct, so we're actually going out and knocking on doors. We have ultimately word of mouth and then also channels. So channels are indirect sales through partners, and a combination of them all ultimately assists us with bringing on customers. But I wouldn't say that that one is better than other. They all somewhat complement each other, and all have to be worked from start to finish.
And that really leads me into asking a question about what is the level of the team that you currently have? Like, what size is your team? And what different roles do your team members play?
Well, SMS globally is comprised of around 600 employees. Here in the U.S., we're comprised of around over 50 employees. And so within our marketing department, there are four employees that are working within that department, and each have some different skill sets and collaborate all together from the strategies I mentioned earlier.
Oh, great. Wow. That's a lot of people. That's great. Specifically your sales department. So you were talking about the different touch points that you have digitally for marketing. Do you have business development, different levels of business development people on your team, and how do they work with clients?
Absolutely. So what we call, most companies would call maybe, for instance, a salesman or an account manager, we call an FSM, a Functional Solutions Manager. And then we also have pre-sales engineers. So the pre-sales engineer is more technical, where the Functional Solutions Manager is more functional or focused more on the business. And so there's a team type strategy. Once in a while, if things get too technical, they might even bring in an engineer, a systems or network engineer. And so sales happens more in a team approach, the FSM being the lead and bringing in resources as needed to address the customer's requirements and needs. And ultimately, sales comes down to building trust. And that's what we're looking to do with our customers from our initial sales strategy is building trust and ensuring that the customer understands that that there is depth and layers within our organization.
Yes, I think that is so incredibly important when you're talking about long-term customer relationships, and especially in the industry that you focus on, it's so important for a business owner to feel like that they can trust their partner in that way and build that long-term relationship.
I agree. You know, when you have access to data and you have access as an administrator in IT, you know, to your ERP or financial systems, to even simply as your email, there absolutely has to be a level of trust. No different from, you know, clerks or accountants within an accounting department or underneath a CFO.
Thanks a lot. We're going to be taking a break. You're listening to KHS 1220 and 98.1 FM, the S. Bryan Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to the Ask Brian Radio Show on KHS 1220 and 98.1 FM. Tracy, you're going to speak to our guest about how we can reach him.
Yes, all of this information that you're providing is incredibly valuable, and the whole context of cybersecurity is so important. What would be a great way for someone who would like to continue this conversation with you to reach out?
Well, I think that they can reach out to us via our website, which is at www.sms, Sam Mary Sam, datacenter.com, or they can give us a call at 949-223-9220.
Fantastic. And for all of you who are listening to the show and want to reflect back on some of the tips that were shared today or go back and listen to some of our previous episodes, Do not forget about the Ask Brian podcast. That's A-S-K-B-R-I-E-N podcast. You can search for it on all of your favorite listening platforms. That's Apple, that's Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio. You name it, we're on it. And be sure to download this episode and follow the podcast for future episodes. Peter?
Thanks, Tracy. So one of the questions people have been asking is, do you work with retail people, like somebody that needs door?
Yeah, absolutely, retail customers. We absolutely do. We have we typically aren't necessarily working with just a retail store, but we're working with a corporation that is running retail stores, whether that those are restaurants, whether those are, you know, multiple retail locations. We absolutely do. And what we've primarily are focused on with those customers at the retail location is network uptime and network security.
Now, does that apply at all to credit card systems? Because I know, and this may be, I may be overstepping, but do you have any systems in place that can help with, like, something, I know, the Squirrel system or other types of debit and credit card systems? Do you do anything along those lines?
So to be honest with you, managed services companies, IT service companies, absolutely work with those systems every day, but there are subject matter experts or ultimately vertical expertise in this space. So typically what occurs, if it was a website and we're doing more e-commerce, then there is a payment gateway that we could assist and ultimately plug into a website. But if we're talking about a retail location, they typically have POS systems, and those POS systems are provided by third parties. The key with the POS system is what I referenced a little earlier, and that has to do with network uptime. So the POS system, as long as it has internet or network connectivity, ultimately will function as long as there's no application issue with regard to the vendor providing that POS and payment gateway. And so we absolutely get involved in there and ensure and monitor the network uptime. And then when ultimately there's an issue between the POS system and the application provider, that's where it would be escalated within our environment. And we would work on our customer's behalf with their vendor to ensure whatever application issue is ultimately resolved. And that's another area that, let's say it's a restaurant. Again, they're not IT people. They need someone on their behalf to push back, to defend ultimately where they're coming from and ultimately what functionally and technically is going on. And it's not necessarily defend. It's more about bringing technical information to the vendor so that together we ultimately can solve the problem.
What about something like ransomware? Do you have anything to do with that?
Oh, wow. That's a big question, a topic in itself, but absolutely. Ransomware is something that is very prevalent in today's world. Primarily is occurring via users and the desktop. That's typically the entry point of ransomware, and it's simply through an email. Somebody clicks on something, somebody opens up a file or an attachment, and ultimately can introduce what is called malware. And through that malware, the perpetrators are ultimately able to harvest credentials. And through harvesting these credentials are usernames and passwords. They ultimately try to get to the administrator password. And once they're able to get there, they're able then to strategically launch a ransomware attack. And ransomware is nothing more than encryption. So you're encrypting someone's data. In a sense, you're locking their data, and you're waiting ultimately for the ransom to give the keys to unlock that data.
We have just a little bit of time left, so just give us your best tip that somebody can do to protect themselves.
The first thing to do is email security, and that's a product we would call security as a service email. And so we have a product that we provide to secure your emails, and ultimately when these malware or files are sent to be clicked, they're quarantined before they ever get to the user. And the second piece is ensuring that you have a next generation or AI-based endpoint protection solution. And ours that we have, that we provide our customers, a security as a service, EP, or endpoint protection. And those pieces of software can ensure that when you try to run an executable file to encrypt the data, that software will stop the executable file from starting, and therefore stop the encryption from happening. Those are the two.
Oh, that was great advice. Thank you very much. Unfortunately, we're out of time. We'll have you back on another episode. You've provided us great information. You've been listening to the Ask Brian Radio Show on KHES 1220 and 98.1 FM. Thank you very much. Until next week, over and out.